In today's show, we have Eric Strom. Eric is with Covering Data Consulting in Minneapolis. I met Eric through a consulting mastermind group, and we're going to talk about best practices for database design and architectures.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutte, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So maybe a good place to get started is tell us how you began your work in this field and how you started your company.
Yeah. So actually, it's been quite a while, almost 20 years now. But originally, I had started out, I had some interest in computers, and I ended up getting a corporate gig where I started just doing some really basic tools-based coding at a smaller company. And what ended up happening is I started playing with the database a little bit, finding little tricks that made the performance go a lot better, and really started getting into that. And I was actually finishing up my computer science degree at the time. And what I found is that, hey, these little things I was learning about maintenance and whatnot made this database go a lot faster and take up a lot more space. And it was just really exciting to be able to do that. And at the same time, I was taking some upper division courses over at the University of Minnesota. So I ended up focusing on databases and operating systems. So it kind of all came together, and that's how I became a database administrator back in like 2000, 2001. And I've been pretty much doing databases ever since.
Okay. So what was your first big break for a customer that got you into business?
Well, actually, the first big break, I would say, came from, I was a DBA for about 10 years before I became an FTE over at a couple of consulting companies locally here, just to work with some very sharp database gurus in the area. And I ended up on a project where I met a bunch of indie software developers and just kind of learned more about what it's like to be an independent and all that kind of stuff. And from there, I ended up getting a gig over at the Archdiocese of Minneapolis and St. Paul as a database architect, and I've been doing independent database work ever since.
So tell us a little bit about the exact services you provide, and why should customers and clients care about improving in this space?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's actually kind of funny because clients tend to really know when they need a database guy, especially when it's performance related. So you might have some software that you've been running for a while. It has a database in the back end, like most software does. And, you know, things start going slower and slower, and you just have more and more problems, and it looks like the software is down. So a lot of times it's when you need a database guy, you really need a database guy. So it's kind of a break fix situation. But building on that, especially when people start to get that the database is a pretty important component of, you know, software systems, they start looking for that kind of service more proactively. And that's both of those situations I run into, places that really appreciate having a good database design because they've been burned before, or they've also got software systems that are just really having performance problems and they just don't have the level of expertise on staff that they need to make the software work fast again.
What do you think at a real core you would say are some of the main reasons why people's databases are slow, or what are textbook examples when you walk in that you see?
Yeah, well, to be frank, most software development projects, this is software that's built in-house. People don't really understand that they need somebody with a decent database expertise to build the software systems. So what they'll end up having to do is just finding out, you know, after it's built that, hey, this is really crappy, or we're either losing data, or we can't do reports off of this, or, you know, things of that nature. So that's essentially when it really becomes apparent that, hey, we need somebody who knows more about this product and kind of how it works under the covers.
Gotcha. And so what kind of ROI are folks getting, do folks typically get when they come in? I mean, what I know on some of your web pages and website, you talk about, you know, 1,000 times speed improvements. So is that typical, or what do people typically see?
You know, frankly, once you, from a perspective of a person who does what I do, once you learn some of the techniques, once you really get that experience under your belt, you know, 1,000, 10,000 times faster actually isn't that hard to achieve. So, you know, let's say you have a web page that on your custom built software that's taking like a minute to load, and you're finding that, let's say, 50 seconds of that 60 seconds is actually happening on the database end. You know, I can use some techniques that just right off the bat, I can get it under a second versus 50 seconds. So it's really a skill that you have to develop over time. But once you understand the main reasons why these kind of problems happen, you can apply it pretty regularly and get results pretty regularly.
Gotcha. Where do you, and when you come into a project, if it's not working, what are some of the problems you run into that makes it sort of harder, or where a project like this would struggle?
Yeah, what I find is when I come into a place that's having a lot of performance issues, you'll have probably be a smaller place. You'll have developers who, you know, maybe can do a little bit of Googling and try to figure out, like, a lot of people assume that the magic button on databases is, hey, I'm going to add an index and suddenly everything will get better, which is far from the case. A lot of times you can add too many, or an index will just straight up be ignored. And then you also have sysadmins who will be able to kind of see what the issues are, and they'll see all the, like, say, on a server, the memory getting taken up, and they'll find that, you know, hey, if I reboot this, this will get better for a while, which is, you know, basically just the symptom, not the problem.
So can you talk a little bit about, for folks that might not be database experts, what is an index and when is it good, when is it bad?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a lot of people kind of use it as an analogy for an index in a book, right? If you need to find something in your book, you go to the back, you look at the index and it says, go to page XYZ. So it's not really all that different. I mean, databases are just where people put all their data, right? So to be able to find your data quickly, you have an index. And the thing about it is, though, you have to understand why an index is used, which means you have to understand how the database works under the covers. Because, you know, I could add 1,000 indexes in a database and make everything worse and not actually have them used at all. So, you know, again, it does come down to the database fundamentals and understanding it under the covers.
Do you typically, when you're looking at an application, are you kind of the belief that, you know, for every query in the application, every database query, there should be a matching index that supports it? Is that kind of how you approach when you're looking at a slow application?
No, not at all. My opinion is that indexes are kind of a fine tuning. So as you understand kind of how the queries are working and what's hitting them, if you have hotspots that can be addressed by indexes, in other words, it's just one tool in your toolbox, if it's clear that this particular tool will help in this situation, then go ahead and do that. But I, actually, funny enough, a lot of times I end up removing indexes to make things faster again, too. So it goes both ways.
Sure. So what do you think at a high level, you know, what makes a good database design versus a bad database design? And what are some of your key tenets you've got around that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I tend to focus on what are called OLTP databases, that means online transaction processing. And really, from a layman's perspective, that's basically application databases. Unlike, you know, big data warehouses where you have to do a bunch of analytics. So when playing in that space, there's somebody who came up with some design principles back in the late 70s, EF COD. And, you know, people tend to hear about it if they're in the technical space, about database normalization. So having a good understanding of those techniques and why you use normalization helps you design better databases. And, you know, in addition to that, understanding how, in my case, I use a software called SQL Server, which is a Microsoft product. So understanding kind of how things work under the covers with SQL Server also affects my physical design as well. So just understanding some of those principles and also the implication of your choices on the database software, both of those are, I would say, are pretty important for good database design.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
So obviously you come in, and if you're trying to fix an application, there's going to be other developers, system administrators, other parties involved. How do you sort of work with them to as a team to make that happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, a lot of different places have, a lot of technical staff have different impressions of what a database person might be able to do. So I used to be more sysadmin-like in how I approached things. So I've worked a lot with sysadmins. I have an appreciation of their jobs, and so it's easy to talk to them about that. But actually, more recently, I've been doing a lot of hybrid development. So I've been wearing that dev hat myself. And so as such, I can more appreciate some of the challenges that come with, you know, software development too, which is more beyond having the perfect database. Ultimately, you need to deliver software, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And then how do you work on these projects just kind of like from a logistical standpoint? Are you going on site? Are you remote for all these projects, or how does that work?
Yeah, I primarily go on site. I really like to interact with customers. My opinion is being there in person and kind of understanding their challenges, being able to work with the staff. That's my personal sweet spot. Some people, you know, don't mind doing it remotely, but I like being on site as much as possible and being able to, you know, get to know the people. And I find I work best when I'm working with a team versus, you know, just working in a basement somewhere with the lights down all by myself. So that's how I like doing things.
So what are some of the sweet spots and new areas you're getting into outside of, you know, performance tuning and application tuning and database design? What are some new areas you're looking to learn more about and get into?
Well, I'm very, very interested in some of the cloud solutions, specifically Microsoft Azure. I really like all of the tools and widgets that you can do there. So they're, not only is there a lot of interesting things going on within the database space with like the different database offerings on Azure, I'm also finding a lot of joy in doing the occasional like microservices in Azure, like Azure Functions and just being able to, you know, compared to like 20 years ago when I was just getting started, the ease at which you can spin up an application or a database and, you know, get something working is just, you know, there's no comparison. So that's what really excites me in that space right now.
Yeah. And what's one of the more kind of rewarding projects you've worked on recently that you've really gotten a lot out of?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me think. So one of the projects I really enjoyed lately was, you know, I got to build a dashboarding project. Essentially, there's a software system called Razor's Edge that's big in the fundraising space. So I got to help build like a BI, that is business intelligence, dashboard for fundraising customers that really brought the data out on a web application. So I got to be involved in building the database, kind of processing the data, getting, you know, the summary stats, and working with a developer to get that all those stats out into a nice looking dashboard. So that was a lot of fun because I both got to, you know, build the database from scratch and kind of work with that, but I also got to do some of the development and work with somebody else who was very talented on the front end side of things. So cool. I really did enjoy that.
Cool. So if we look at the industry that your customers are in and kind of the different sectors you're working in, what are some of the key pressures they're facing that are kind of driving them to build new applications and sort of be concerned about performance?
Yeah, that's a good question. So right now I'm focusing mostly in the software as a service space. And the reason is customers in that area, unlike if you have a slow database, let's say on your accounting software, like Great Plains, let's say, you know, your accounting staff can wait a little bit. But if you have a database backend for a software service that you're providing to everybody over the internet, and it's just not performing like you need to, you can lose customers. You know, you can, I mean, it has a direct impact on your cash flow, right? So that's one area that I like to focus on. And what I typically see in that space is, you know, a lot of companies are like a victim of their own success. So, you know, they're trying to really quickly build a product so that they can get market share and, you know, become successful from a profit standpoint. But at the same time, there's more and more strain on their database design, which, you know, typically you're not going to have a database architect helping you build it, right? You're just, you know, it's just going to be a few developers at first trying to build something as quickly as possible.
Yeah. So kind of they get their MVP to market, but then scaling that is where they run into trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, a lot of times the database is the bottleneck, and sometimes throwing hardware at it just isn't good enough.
Yeah. So, and I think obviously that sort of move towards the cloud and software as a service is affecting and impacting your customers and their need for more performant databases. Are there other technologies that, you know, if we look at AI or big data or something that are also pushing them to need more performance and more structure?
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as AI and big data, I like that a lot of the services are becoming more approachable to, you know, the average technologist. As far as what I'm seeing in the industry, there's a lot more interest in, you know, different types of database solutions. So like, you know, from a developer perspective, you know, there's some databases that natively store as JSON and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it seems to me that, you know, relational databases still seem to be the predominant solution for software as a service providers.
Gotcha. I mean, have you ever worked too much with you know, for those type of applications, sometimes, you know, there's all the NoSQL databases and, you know, Google style whatever they call theirs, Big Table and such, right? How do those compare in the market to SQL Server and other solutions?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what I've been seeing is when you need like a lot of performance, but some of the things that relational databases are really good at aren't as important. Like you take Twitter for example. If you might lose the occasional tweet, it might not be the end of the world compared to like banking software, for example. Mm-hmm. So they're willing to compromise things like consistency for speed. And so that's kind of what NoSQL is. There's like a set of tenets that relational databases are built on. And some of those tenets are relaxed to get better things like speed, for example, or make it better distributed. So that being said, a lot of times it's just a lack of understanding of relational databases that make some developers seek other solutions.
Yeah, because they feel like that, you know, if they don't know how to build a good table structure, if they use NoSQL or something, maybe they don't have to, you know, and then right. that's not necessarily the reason to choose it, right?
Yeah, and then you end up needing like a MongoDB database administrator, which is like a 1 in 100 compared to like a SQL DBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever looked at some of the time series database solutions out there, like InfluxDB and others? Have you ever had exposure to those?
I have not. However, I do like what SQL Server has been doing in that space. Mm-hmm. You know, all the relational database providers need to stay competitive. So, you know, I really like the idea of being able to, easily. Like one of the big problems I've always had with getting fast and easy queries for this is like when records change over time, and I've seen some better solutions coming out of SQL Server with that, although I haven't really touched that too much.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess some of those systems like SQL Server, for instance, I think it starts to lose a little when you're dealing with just extremely high speed. Massive amounts of data being written or pushed out of a factory full of IoT devices, right?
Yeah.
You don't have necessarily really complex queries because you're just wanting to know like what was the maximum temperature in the last 2 days, right?
Right.
Relatively simple queries, right? You just need to write, 1,000 of them a minute or something,
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. That's one thing I do find interesting, even if I'm not particular expert in some of these NoSQL solutions. You know, it really is neat to see a lot more variety based on like specialized needs that you need with data storage. So it's a pretty interesting space nowadays.
Yeah, it's just that specialization of databases means that the tools are better suited for what you're using them for, which means they're more powerful. But of course, it also means if you pick the wrong one, can be a horrible fit for what you're doing. like we said. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So, how are customers in general sort of finding people to help them with these problems? And do you think is there a better way than what folks typically do?
Yeah. So there's probably two major ways that people find database experts. That I see. One is reaching out to your local or sometimes national recruiting company, which is just like, I need an IT resource. You've helped me with IT resources. So, hey, what do you got for me? And there are local companies that do specialize in like database and analytics and stuff like that. So I would say those are the two major ways. That people tend to look for database resources. However, just based on experience, recruiting companies can be very hit or miss because, they don't tend to understand, even within the database space, there's different specialties. So, a guy who can build data warehouses isn't going to be able to, make your app database perform really fast, because that's just not where he's focused his time. So that can be very hit or miss.
Yeah. So Eric, what's one of the best results you've gotten in terms of making a database faster?
Well, actually, there was one time when I worked at the state, I was really just trying to help them a bit with a batch process that that one of the departments was working on. It was taking 8 hours to run and starting to spill into kind of the normal business hours. So I had this process where the database component was taking about 4 of that 8 hours. And actually, I ended up, after looking at it was Java code calling SQL queries, and I ended up tuning that, going from 4 hours, and at first it went down to a minute, and then I checked it out something else and got it down to 13 seconds. So that was like, I think, a 40,000 times performance improvement.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Cool. So you are involved upcoming here with SQL Saturday up in Minnesota. Can you tell me a little bit about what that event is and about that?
Yeah, so SQL Saturday is actually a really big thing within our profession, which is our professional organization is called PASS, which is the Professional Association for SQL Server. Mm-hmm. And they have SQL Saturdays all over the world. And, I mean, you can find them in India or New Zealand, Europe, pretty much anywhere you can think of. But the one over in Minnesota is actually coming up on October 12th at a place called St. Paul College over in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I'll be a sponsor there, so I'll be working the booths over there, and it's a really good opportunity to learn a bunch more about SQL Server. It's a full day. You've got experts coming in from different parts of the country, as well as some really talented people locally, and it's really fun. And you get to meet a lot of cool people, and I just really enjoy it.
And when is that?
That's October 12th.
And so, Eric, what are the top three problems that a company might have that they should reach out to you about?
Yeah. So a few different use cases. One is if you're just having a lot of problems with your databases in general, whether it's, be performance, or you're really trying to solve a complex problem within your databases. I've done a deep dive within SQL Server. I'm one of, I think, 6 Microsoft certified masters in SQL Server. It just means that I went pretty deep into it. But if you have performance problems, or you're trying to get SQL Server to do something that you're just not able to get it to do, I can help with that. In addition to that, around building new applications, I'm very good at building new databases and doing database architecture and design. So those are the major areas that I really enjoy helping companies with.
Great. And how can people contact you if they want to reach out?
Sure. Yeah, there's a few different ways. One, if you want to check out my website, it's coveringdata.com. And I have a blog there, as well as it describes my services. But if you want to reach out via email, it's Eric, E-R-I-C, at coveringdata.com. And you can always reach me at phone at 612-991-0623.
Great. Well, Eric, so thanks so much for coming on the show. Obviously, you've got a lot of background in databases, and I think when it comes to building systems and applications, a lot of times databases are an afterthought or sometimes neglected. So I think there's a lot of folks out there that need your help, and it's definitely good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sam.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoy today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.